This is The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, today, why do we increasingly seem to feel that the best way to resolve issues, perceived or real wrongdoing on the part of people we encounter in public places, is to take the issue online? Most of you would be familiar with the recent incident involving a BMW driver and a petrol pump attendant, which went viral a few days ago. This was after a Facebook user posted an account of what happened. And according to her, the driver of the BMW had refused to pay $135 for his full tank of petrol because he said that he had only asked for $10 worth. So the pump attendant calmly informed the cashier, well, let him pay 10 bucks. I will personally absorb the rest of the cost. It's not fair, but lots has happened since then. Caltex has said it won't make the pump attendant pay, which is good. The driver, though, has been CSI'd by netizens. His personal details, among other things, the company he works for, his LinkedIn profile, his mobile number, his usual parking spots as well, were made public. Now, another recent incident, a man was seen kicking a young boy at an indoor playground, and CCTV footage of the incident was widely circulated online after it was shared on Facebook by the boy's mother. A few years ago, we saw an errant retailer at Sim Lim Square taken to task after footage of him and his practices surfaced online. Of course, there's some good in this because, for instance, in the Sim Lim incident, action was taken, many say, as a result of the viral video, but many ask if any of these issues could have been adequately handled if they had not been put before the court of public opinion. Is this really the best way to do it? Joining me today, writer and cultural critic Kirpal Singh and Jamie Ho, chief editor of Channel News Asia's digital news desk. So first of all, Jamie, could you jump in with some of the responses on social media that stood out for you, especially in the last case that we saw, the Caltex case?
I think in the end, I think the pattern in reactions has become really quite typical and quite predictable. So in the first instance when it happened, yes, everyone sort of went online. Very, very quickly, the guy's identity was made known, as you said. It became completely transparent. You know, the power of the internet in enabling people to investigate is quite amazing. But after a while, I think we began to see a little bit more of people who were saying, well, let's take a step back. And especially when, and unfortunately only when it became clear that the picture wasn't as clear as was what was suggested in the beginning, right? In that this guy may have had a case, as we later found out that this guy was going to trade in his car and there could have been a reason why he only wanted $10 worth of petrol.
But I think people still continue to take issue with the fact that he expected the pump attendant to pay
again,
for it.
Again, as investigations are still ongoing, I think Caltex have said, again, that's only one part of the story, right? I think increasingly you do see people's comments randomly and quite regularly come out to say that let's take a look at the other angle. So, of course, the voice of outrage sort of prevailed in the beginning, but I think over time people still find some way to calm down after a while. I think that's what happened.
My issue is with the way people feel that this is really the best way to resolve things or to take people to task. What's your perspective on this, Kirpal?
My personal view is that in some ways this is going back into history. I grew up in kampongs. And in kampongs, whether it was kampongs in Batu Gajah or Ipoh or even in Singapore, the whole kampong sort of got together to resolve disputes. So during the racial riots in Singapore, 63-64, we formed vigilante corps. And these vigilante corps, right, the people would go like one Chinese and one Malay, one Tamil and one, you know, Malay boy or something. Always always two different races.
Everyone needs to be represented.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And they would try and resolve issues. Where this was not possible, they'll get the elders of the kampong to come together and resolve an issue. So to me, this is nothing new, but it does suggest something.
But you see, in the process you described, it seems like there is a real process. There is a system of sitting together, talking it out. In this case, it just seems like, oh, look what happened. Look what this guy did. And then there's an online lynch mob waiting to go after him.
The system these days is basically, instead of justice, is public shaming. I think public shaming has become the ends in and of itself. Correct. Rather than you know, seeking justice and resolving issues, I think most people through social media have jumped upon how easy it is to seek public shaming, and I think that was what it was meant to do in the first instance.
In a way, it's a good thing because it shows that there are people out there who care about graciousness and good behavior.
No, I wouldn't see that like that at all whatsoever.
Why not?
It's just a mob mentality which emerges in the first instance with the direct sort of aim of public shaming. Social justice and resolving the issue, I think, was a necessary...
A byproduct of it. Yeah.
Not necessarily...
Their aim.
I don't think it came from such a...
I'm so cynical.
Global. Yeah, I think so. Because people, the way that social media rewards your actions is entirely empowering for these people, right? They see that, oh my God, this is what I've done. 1,000 shares on my CSI. And they feel, I mean, people feel good about that, right? And that's how it works, right?
I think social media today, for me, is just repeating what we've witnessed many times in history. Yeah. It'll continue to happen. What we have to find is how do we then make sure that the people who are victimized or accused are legitimately accused.
Exactly. Because I should bring this up as well. Last year, there was a video of an altercation at a hawker center in Toa Payoh, and this one went viral as well. There was a couple seen arguing with an elderly man. They had asked to share a table with them. And netizens went online to identify the couple. Initially, they named the wrong people.
Yes.
So the woman who was actually wrongly identified said she was quite traumatized about this.
Yes.
So you don't have the full picture. How do you go
because
about doing this?
It's a kind of public vilification, right?
Yeah.
But in time, we will all be numbed, you know? And so in that state of numbness, it probably would not matter until something further took place, until a new consequence or a new development took place. So, in other words, what appears on digital platforms in social media these days, you know, should, as my old uncle used to say, be taken with large doses of salt, large pinches of salt, until it goes further. Yeah.
In which case, if we're talking about online vigilantism per se, you could be breaking laws by harassing the person whom you think has done the wrongdoing. There's a protection against harassment. Do you have to take it so far? Is the public shaming in itself enough, you know, for action to be taken on the ground? But that's the other thing. In the case of Sim Lim Square, a lot of people stood up to say, if all of this had not gone viral, would the authorities have taken any action? Because troubles at Sim Lim Square had been going on for years.
You can never prove a negative, right? You can never say that this only happened because I did this.
Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, the fact is, yes, it happened as a consequence, or you can say as a result of, but you cannot also say, if I didn't do it, nothing would have happened. Nothing would have been done. Did they try alternatives? That's the thing, right? No one actually knows.
Even when it comes to other issues, for instance, we've seen over the years complaints that parents might have had about teachers or a childcare center's behavior or treatment of their child, and they would straight away take it to social media. One would wonder, did you try to resolve it face-to-face?
Very often, from what I gather, especially in the educational kind of thing with schools, the parents actually do try. When like all efforts fail, then they take it big time to social media, hoping that that would be like a threat, or a shaming exercise that school X and teacher Y would be so embarrassed that they would be forced to answer. It's like letters to the forum page, you know?
That used to be it in the past. So, yes.
In the old days,
That's right. So it's a similar thing.
Tell a reporter about it as well, perhaps.
Correct.
I was just looking at some of the comments that came out of the Caltech situation, since that is one of the more recent cases.
Right.
And some people actually said, there's no need to even do the public shaming. When you see something like that happen, intervene directly. So clearly there are people in society who feel differently.
It's always like that, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, everyone always, when they see anything happening, whether it's an injustice, whether it's someone having a fight, someone's bullying someone, the first thing you do is take out your phone and take a video of it. And then after that, expect that the mob justice will take its course, right? When actually, you know, at the end of the day, you, the one taking the video, could you not have intervened? Could not someone have intervened and tried to help the situation? You see that every other day online. So again, yes, if indeed the person taking the video was really at the core seeking some sort of justice and reparation, then it could have been done differently. Couldn't.
So this is why we question their motivations, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, their motivation, I don't know whether you saw, there are all sorts of videos. You read about the plane, which about 2 days ago nearly crashed. The woman died.
Right.
Some guy actually live streamed the thing, and people are criticizing him as to why were you live streaming the plane as it was going down. And he says, well, I could have died. I wanted people to see my last moments. But again, it shows you people's first instincts are to get online and to record the moment for whatever purposes. And I think this is exactly
it's
what happened.
Kind of funny,
it's a weird mentality. But
funny repositioning of the Me Too movement.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, some good can come out of all of this.
Sure.
But also, we've had a lot of experts also say it's fine to document it in that video form, but give it to the authorities.
But give it to
the police. Let them take appropriate action. Don't bother posting it online.
Sure. But Bharati, you know, throughout history, when something new hits, right, people tend to overreact and it goes excessive, in excess of what we may assume to be a normal response or reaction. So let things settle down a little bit. I mean, you know, the digital platforms, all the excitement lasts maybe less than 24 hours, and then you move on to a new story, the next sensation and all of that. Of course, some stories persist a little longer because people feel there's no resolution yet, or enough people are angry or moved or provoked or whatever, you know, agitated to comment and all that. But, you know, in 2 months, Caltex would be old news.
Exactly.
Not there might 2 months, be. In fact, usually 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
Days.
So,
this one's lasted
this
quite
one
a bit, though. Quite a bit because of the varying accounts
right.
of what could have happened
right.
and how the
That's
situation
right.
will
That's
be
right.
dealt with.
Right.
I wrote a piece on this quite recently as well, on online vigilantism specifically. And I discovered that actually a lot of people are saying if they feel that law enforcement would take action, they wouldn't use social media as a means to give impetus to any sort of action. So perhaps what needs to be done is for the authorities to come out and say, look, we'll give it the attention it is due if you give us
the
video.
But to be fair,
it,
in many of these cases, it's not an issue of the law. It's not an issue of
sometimes it's a misunderstanding.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this case of the Caltex, it's got nothing to do with the police, isn't it? I mean, even if you give given the video to the police, they wouldn't do anything about it because nothing happened.
Yeah, it wasn't as theft or,
it wasn't
theft,
you
know.
It was just maybe, at the end of the day, a misunderstanding, which was why the police said what they said. In the first instance where they issued a response,
but in
the
Sim Lim Square incident, that became a police case. So we also have to be discerning about these things. What is merely a misunderstanding? What is merely bad behavior or rude behavior? And what is a legal issue?
But again, it goes back to what I said, right? I think the end goal for people who do this is pure and simply public shaming. I don't think it's meant to address...
Actually resolve the situation.
Actually resolve the situation or seek some form of enforcement.
But I think we need to also divide the moral from the legal. Very often, the moral is the one that gets the growth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because by and large, people are afraid of the law and being put to the test that way. But where there are morally ambivalent or ambiguous issues, that's where they feel that, everyone is entitled to say something about it.
Mm.
Like, you know, what makes a good teacher? Wow, 1,000 different responses.
Yeah.
So we have to exercise great discretion and discernment and also have a very fine sieve to make sure that we sieve the bad from the good, you know. I think this is becoming more and more a challenge. So I would say wait and see.
Media literacy, I think, is something that comes into play here. Like you
Absolutely.
Said, you know, it goes
yep.
back to certain tenets that we have discussed before.
Yep.
When it comes to online vigilantism, I mean, there's nothing you can really do about it unless it crosses a line, as we mentioned earlier, that might be covered under the Protection of Harassment Act or Defamation Act and things like that. But you said, Kirpal, people need to start taking things with a huge grain of salt.
Yes.
How to create this environment, how to encourage an environment where people stop, think twice before they comment, before they CSI someone, before they start harassing someone and say that this is justifiable in the name of social justice?
Well, I mean, in Singapore, we have several different bodies, but I think most of them are either, you know, adopting the attitude of let's wait and watch and see, or I'm not sure what quite to do. So, like the media authority, I think they should educate people. They should come in more you know, strongly and intensely and say, hey, guys, you know, for what it is worth, you know, this might be worth considering, or I wish to share with you certain protocols of decorum, good behavior, you know, on social media, those kinds of things. But we are not doing that enough, I think. So there are not enough watchdog or watch bodies that are prepared to come out and articulate their reservations, or perhaps even share with us how we can educate a public that is so excited about social media, but whose knowledge and understanding of what social media can actually do, both good and bad, is perhaps quite limited.
What do you think, Jamie? Education?
In this particular instance, we're talking about online vigilantes. I think education can only do so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because let's be honest. I mean, we've all seen online and social media random videos of, and this is the best, people love sharing this, of someone not giving up a seat on the train to either a pregnant woman or to an old person, or someone who's parked his vehicle a little bit outside the line and everyone sort of spams the guy.
Doesn't all of this make you afraid to do anything in public?
Exactly. Yeah. So, sometimes
you may not even intend to do something bad, but you've inadvertently done it, and there you go.
There's no context to it, right? Yeah. So any video, any photo only shows you something in a moment, in a point of time.
You get
so
filmed and publicly shamed for nothing.
That's why I have a colleague who's decided he's never going to sit down on a train, whether it's empty or not, because, you know, you never know.
I don't
sit down as well. So in any case, the whole point is that there is a very deep and strangely inexplicable behavior that people have on social media when it comes to this kind of shaming, this kind of calling out, this kind of sharing, this kind of feeling outraged at bad behavior. And this will be there forever. So in terms of educating, I think there's only that much you can do. It's going to be swimming uphill, upstream, and I don't think that, especially in this part of the equation, that's going to be very, very helpful.
What would your answer be? How do we move away from this?
I don't think over time people will, because I'm quite hopeful. And as you can see in the Caltex case, things actually on social media, it's like wildfire.
Yeah.
In the first 1-2 days, it'll burn like anything. You know what I mean? People go crazy about it. You go mad about it. But after 2 days, it will die off.
In the past, though, we have seen cases where people have had to leave their jobs and move to another country.
Anton, what was the guy?
There was another woman who had talked about Malay weddings.
That's right.
In a very negative fashion.
She left
her job and left the country.
So it
can get quite extreme, this sort of thing.
I think over time, people will get a little bit more used to the fact that in the first 2 days, brush of this thing, there is going to be a lot of anger and things like that, and it's all up to employers, people, to sort of take a step back and not react in the very first instance to what you see online. And I think once people get used to the habit of not having that knee-jerk reaction in the first instance, then I think things will blow over. So like in this case of this guy, the Caltex guy, because his employer or his employment information was leaked, people already say, oh my god, what is his employer going to do about it? I'm glad nothing happened on that front, because there was no need. Right, but it maybe in the past, certain employees would have been forced to react in the very first instance to say, "Oh my God, we're going to speak to this guy, or he's no longer in our employment." But in this particular case, I think even if it was just a short while, I'm glad that no one reacted in that.
You also have to ask yourself, how would you feel if you did something wrong in public? Let's say you didn't give up a seat to someone on the train, maybe just because you fell asleep or whatever. You get filmed, you get shamed online. Mm-hmm. Your employer says you've embarrassed us. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that something like that could lead to a destruction of your entire career, that just doesn't seem fair.
So I think we do need a lot of understanding and a lot of wisdom in exercising those kinds of extreme measures.
Discernment, making
people lose jobs and those kinds of things.
And it depends on exactly what you did wrong.
Yeah. In the old days, we used to have this, you know, we used to have rumors and gossip, right? Mm. People will be spreading, you know, we call them rumor mongers. Don't listen to them. Other people will say, hey, that woman is having an affair here, and said, hey, don't gossip by you. Don't go in, you know, you're going to get sued for all kinds of libel and scandal and all of that. So I think now, instead of gossip word by mouth and all that, now it's going word by digital platform.
Yeah, in a much more effective way.
Effective.
It travels faster, more efficiently.
But at the same time, it also numbs people. So a lot of people say, I can't take this seriously. The only worry I have is, like, you know, the guy who cried wolf 3 times, that sometimes you hear something on the thing and people shout and react, but now if we numb ourselves and desensitize ourselves, then something serious actually could be being reported or excitedly put on the platform, which we will say, oh yeah, another of those, you know.
Yeah, and meaning, we ignore it.
That's right, and then ignore when it we really to our
shouldn't.
Peril.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when yeah. we really shouldn't.
That's right, that could be a problem.
Considering all that you've said, Kirpal, what's the way ahead, you think?
I think the way ahead, for me, I mean, you know, my good friend Jamie here differs, but only way is education and more education. Education means both looking at the case, but also learning by instances which teach us. In other words, there are examples, and some cost will be incurred. Some people will get hurt in the process and all of that. They're always victims. You know, I tell my daughters that you cannot ask for justice in the world all the time. There always has been more injustice than justice. But we hope for a better world in which there'll be more just people, there'll be more just responses, there'll be more just, you know, kinds of reactions to incidents. But to be just requires time, requires deliberation, requires consideration, requires good minds coming together to consider a case. But the digital media now presents us with a challenge because everybody wants to get into the act like now, you know. So 1 microsecond is already 1 microsecond too late. I worry about our young who are now randomly exposed to almost everything on media. And that means that parents have to act, you know, triply, quadruply harder to make sure and ensure that their children are educated. It's no longer right, you must not see this, but how are you going to see it and how are you going to digest and respond and react to it? I think all parents face this dilemma in a very big way now.
Now, Jamie, you've got kids. Anything to add on that front?
I think whether we see it or not, I think we sometimes give kids less credit than they may deserve. I think we should give them a little bit more credit because
they do have some common sense.
Sure.
They do have a lot of common sense.
Exactly.
So, and because they are the ones who are at the forefront of being, you know, under barrage of information, and they are the ones online all the time, so they see so much more than we do. So over time, I think they will develop some sort of filter as well. After a while, when they see 3-4 different, and then there was recently another video of some fight that happened in Temasek Polytechnic, right?
Oh, yes.
In some lecture theatre. And you saw, and there are so many videos, so many different angles, because you can imagine, right, a lecture theatre full of teenagers. So you, after a while, you see one, you see two, and you see 4-5 different angles, and you see that there are certain dynamics there. And you come to your own conclusion as to what happened at the end of the day. And hopefully people over time get into that habit of thinking through what actually is the situation at hand and whether they need to even make a judgment on any of the protagonists in this particular video or on any video that's going to happen. Yeah. So I always tell, you know, I always feel sorry when I see videos, for example, and I tell my kids this. You see a video, for example, of someone behaving badly in public, right? Whether this guy is shouting at someone else or yelling at someone in the queue or just walking around yelling, acting strange.
Or spitting at people.
Or whatever. And sometimes you have to think, is there something not right about this person, right? This person may actually be disturbed. He may have an issue. He may have a mental/social issue. And yes, people have great fun looking at it and sharing it and all that. But I think if people just take the extra effort to just think a little bit, if you were this guy's parent, if you were this guy's husband, wife, you know, are you going to be very happy to see that this video is out there? When you do know that this person maybe does have a schizophrenic disorder, who may be slightly autistic, whatever the case may be, I think people should have that little bit more empathy when they look at things. And I think we are, and I'm always optimistic, we're getting there very slowly.
A dash of empathy, some discernment, I think, is very, very key here. Many thanks to both of you for joining me today, writer and cultural critic Kirpal Singh and Jamie Ho, chief editor of Channel News Asia's Digital News Desk. Thanks for joining me on The Pulse.
Thank you.